Welcome back to Fit Body Happy Joints. My name is Shannon. Today we're talking about genetics and how genetics influence your training or your adaptations from how you train. It can get really easy for us to compare our results to someone else's. Two people could eat and train exactly the same and still look completely different. And it's because eating and training are not the only components to how your body responds. There's lifestyle factors, there is genetics, and genetics aren't everything, but they are important. But today I want to kind of unveil how important are genetics and how do they influence how our body adapts to exercise. Again, we can't blame genetics for everything, but we can acknowledge that they're a reality and that we can work with what we've got to improve our health as much as we can. So today we'll kind of talk about how much genetics influence your training. We'll talk about hormones and fiber composition type and how much of that is genetically predisposed. And I'll kind of help you categorize yourself into different buckets based on your genetics. And I'll give you suggestions on how to train based on your genetics. I think that understanding that so many people of fitness influence, like the people that we see on social media, are predisposed to look a certain way. They're predisposed to be better at certain forms of fitness and therefore be leaders in their respective forms of fitness. Understanding this can really help us release expectations and release the compare and despair that we may feel after scrolling social media, even for just a few moments. My goal of this episode is to help inspire you to kind of keep your blinders on, understand your own body and your own genetics a little bit more so that you're not comparing your results to someone else's. You're really staying in your own lane and trying to manipulate and control what you can control. So understanding that your body's response will be unique will help you train smarter, not harder, ultimately. All right, so I did a lot of research for this episode, and people get entire doctorate degrees in genetics. So this is a complex topic that I'm going to keep pretty high level like I do in most of my episodes. But I did do a fair amount of research, so anything that I reference, I will link in the show notes. So one of the largest twin studies, and I think they had like a million people in this study, something like that, showed that genetics account for 50 to 60% of strength measures. So that means that about half of strength and potential muscle mass you can gain from training is genetically predisposed. But that also means that there's a large amount that's up to you, that's up to how you train, and that's up to your lifestyle. Understanding that genetics are half the equation, so we have to take responsibility for the other half. Before blaming your genetics, which I think is kind of easy for us to do, and honestly, I think one of the least empowering things is to blame your genetics. I think it's important that we look at lifestyle factors like sleep and stress and nutrition and training. I think many people have a few of those down, like maybe they're exercising well and they're consistent with their exercise, but on the weekends they're eating poorly, or maybe they're drinking every single night. So maybe they're in overall calorie surplus and they're gaining weight and they feel like, well, I'm exercising, I'm doing all the right things and I'm not seeing the results. Oh, it must be my genetics. When in reality, it could be because they're in a calorie surplus because they're going crazy on the weekends or they're drinking every night and so they're not sleeping well and therefore they're not recovering. And when you're not recovering, you won't see the same results from training. So I think that understanding what I'll talk about today about genetics is important. For most of us, it's about being really honest about the lifestyle factors that we have. And I don't want anyone to listen to that and feel guilty for eating the fun foods on the weekends or drinking the wine that you enjoy. For me personally, I know that I could be a lot more quote unquote cut if I didn't ever go out to eat and I never ate bread and ice cream or drank margaritas, but I enjoy those things. And I don't think I want to live a life where I don't have those things in my life semi-regularly. So for me, that like super cut, super duper lean, super muscular look is just not my expectation, because I know that that will have to take an immense amount of restriction for me and my genetic potential. And that's just not the lifestyle that I want. So I think setting your expectations and asking yourself, what do you really value? How do you really want your life to look? And understanding that trying to out-exercise your diet will not work. But sometimes it's about sitting down with yourself and having a real conversation about how you really want your life to look and how that may match or conflict with your fitness goals. Okay, so rant over. I think that I just wanted to say all of that because it's easy to just be like, throw your hands in the air and be like, oh, I can't control any of this. It's genetics. When in reality, genetics is only half the equation. The other half is up to us, which I think is really empowering. So let's start by talking about muscle fiber composition and how much of that is genetically predisposed and how much of that we can control. So your skeletal muscle, the muscle that you see on the outside of your body, like your quads, your biceps, your shoulders, your glutes, your abs, your skeletal muscle has different composition of fibers. There are your type 1 muscle fibers and your type 2 muscle fibers. And there are several classifications within your type 2 muscle fibers, but for today, we're going to keep this really generalized and we'll just kind of talk about type 1 fibers and type 2 fibers. I actually plan to do a separate episode digging into fiber types here soon. So type 1 fibers are your endurance fibers. Until recently, we thought that type 1 fibers were smaller than type 2 fibers. But I'm reading more and more about this, and the current literature is saying this is not always the case. Type 1 fibers are not always smaller than type 2 fibers. But in general, type 1 fibers tend to be smaller, and they're your more endurance fibers that are activated with things like, you know, high rep, low weight exercise, like a bar class or a Pilates exercise where you're doing an exercise for minutes and minutes on end. That's engaging your type 1 muscle fibers. They're also engaged in more endurance activities like walking or jogging or swimming or biking, things like that. Your body prefers to use your type 1 fibers because they require less energy to engage. They're less metabolically expensive. And then you have your type 2 fibers, which are the more powerful fibers that are easily fatigued. So these fibers are called into action anytime there's significant challenge to your muscle. And the type 2 fibers are not strong enough to complete the movement. So this can happen if you lift something heavy, you're going to recruit your type 2 fibers. If you do a plyometric jump, you're going to recruit type 2 fibers, or sprint. Or the type 2 fibers are even engaged in the last final reps of your set where you're approaching failure and your type 1 fibers are not strong enough to resist the load as you're fatiguing. So in the Evlo classes, as you know, you're getting to the last few reps of your set where you're getting close to failure, that's where you're calling in those type 2 muscle fibers. Studies show that we tend to lose a greater amount of type 2 fibers as we age, which can greatly influence our strength, our power, our metabolism, our insulin sensitivity, and our overall body composition. The higher composition we can keep of type 2 fibers as we age, the better we will age. The better our body composition, the better we will feel from a cellular level. So we really want to preserve as much of that type 2 fiber content that we can. Some muscles have a greater composition of type 2 fibers and type 1 fibers, like your gastrocnemius, one of your calf muscles, tends to have more type 2 fibers. It tends to be more of a type 2 dominant muscle. And then you have some muscles that have more type 1 fibers, and they tend to be more of an endurance muscle, like your soleus, which is the calf muscle underneath your gastrocnemius. And then most muscles have a mix of both type 1 muscle fibers and type 2 fibers. So they can be more of an endurance muscle, and they can also be that fast twitch, that plyometric, that strong power muscle. So muscles themselves can have different composition of fiber types. And then individuals will also have different composition of fiber types. And a lot of this is up to genetics. Some people will have a higher ratio of type 2 fibers to type 1 fibers. So these are like your more powerful people. I'm going to get into this here in a second. And then some people maybe have a greater composition of type 1 fibers. Maybe these are people that aren't super powerful, but they can walk for a really long time because they have more, a greater composition of those endurance fibers in relation to your type 2 powerful fibers. The proportion of these fibers in each individual is influenced by genetics by about 40 to 50%. So again, about half of your fiber type composition is influenced by genetics. This means that the other half can be influenced potentially by training and lifestyle. So you may be able to shift your fiber type composition, which I'll talk about here in just a moment. A good way to guess what genetically are you? Are you more of a type 2 fiber type person? Are you more of a type 1? Are you a blend? A good way to kind of guess your genetic disposition of fiber type composition is to take yourself back to high school and ask yourself some of these questions. And I say high school because it's after puberty and it's before some of the lifestyle factors and age may have kicked in, which could influence how you answer these, right? Because if you've been sedentary for 20 years, this may be a completely different story than how you were when you were in high school. And how you were in high school may be a better picture of your genetic potential. So how to know if you're more type 2 fiber dominant? So if you have a greater composition of those more powerful, those larger type 2 muscle fibers. So if you feel like you're someone who naturally, you've always been able to jump high, sprint fast, you're good at explosive activities. In high school, maybe you were an athlete, maybe you ran track, and maybe you were really good at all of that. Maybe you played basketball or volleyball, you felt like you could jump high really easily with not a ton of effort. If you feel like you can gain muscle easily, like you don't have to do a lot of exercise to see muscle definition, or maybe after puberty one day, you just woke up and you had biceps and you're like, I don't even train. Where did this come from? Maybe you prefer HIIT or super heavy lifting or sprinting or CrossFit or playing sports as a form of exercise. These things are indications that you could be more type 2 dominant. In influence, these are often going to be all of the fitness trainers that you see online. Generally, these fitness trainers will have some sort of genetic influence that makes them look a certain way. This could be, you know, bodybuilders. This could be fitness influencers, sprinters, those who gravitate again towards CrossFit. And this is also oftentimes your power athletes, like your runners, your basketball players, sometimes even your tennis players, things like that. Again, you can't entirely contribute how someone looks to genetics. And it's not that those people aren't working hard to have the body that they have, but often those that we see in influence who are very muscular and very lean happen to lean a little bit more type 2 fiber dominant genetically. Because here's how this works. Someone starts training, someone who leans genetically towards that type 2 muscle fiber composition. They start training and they start seeing results relatively quickly and easily because of the nature of how their body responds. And then they start, you know, looking muscular and potentially lean, and people start to ask them what they're doing. How are you training? What are you doing? Tell me how you're working out. And then they start to view themselves as a leader and as an authority. They're like, well, I must be doing something right because I'm really seeing great adaptations from my training. And then they start training more and harder because the results keep coming and it starts to get fun to see. And this can hook them and become a lifestyle. And then they start to train others to try to help them see the same results. Again, I'm not saying that these people shouldn't be leaders in the fitness industry. I'm not saying that at all. But just understanding that genetics often play about 50% of the equation is really important, because that 50% can be a significant advantage or jumping off point for people. Because if they naturally are able to gain muscle easily, they can probably be more consistent because the results come easier and it can start to snowball. So I think it's just really important to understand that, so that we're not comparing our results to someone else's, even though we follow their program exactly. So that's if you lean type 2 dominant. How to know if you're type 1 fiber dominant? Again, these are the endurance, smaller fibers. Again, take yourself back to high school and ask yourself, after puberty, how did your body respond? If you were maybe slower, couldn't jump high naturally, may not feel naturally strong, may not gravitate towards lifting heavy weights, like may just feel like that's not an interest of you because maybe you're not very good at it. You might have preferred Pilates or yoga or lightweight activities or even endurance activities like running and biking. In influence, and who we're going to see genetically that tends to lean this way, tends to be models, tends to be long distance runners, dancers, Pilates instructors, generally people who don't have a lot of muscle definition. I would classify myself as genetically predisposed to this type 1 fiber composition. I cannot jump. I have no hops. I am super slow. I don't feel naturally strong. I've had to work hard to build muscle and to gain strength, and it does not come naturally to me. So I think that I tend to lean more of this type one dominant by nature. Of course, most of us can't classify ourselves into just type one dominant or just type two dominant. Most of the people listening are going to be a mix. And if you are a mix, you may feel like you can gain muscle kind of fast, maybe average, like you start to see changes within 8 to 12 weeks. Maybe you feel like you're not the highest jumper, but you're not terrible. You're not super fast. You're not super slow. You may, you know, respond pretty well to most types of training, but not like, you know, snap your fingers and see responses. This is where most of the people are going to fall. So knowing where we may fall genetically and that type 2 fibers are important to maintain and or gain as we age, how can we influence this? How can we work with our genetic predisposition to train and have the lifestyle that's ultimately going to improve our health the most? So if you don't use it, you lose it. And again, we want to keep a good composition of those type 2 muscle fibers. But as we age, we tend to lose them. Your body would prefer to keep a higher composition of type 1 fibers because they aren't as metabolically costly to maintain. So as we lose our type 2 fibers as we age, our metabolism is also affected and our body composition will also be affected. So keeping those type 2 muscle fibers will improve your metabolic flexibility. It will improve your body composition, your insulin sensitivity, how you feel. It's truly anti-aging because your body's always looking for the path of least resistance. And since those type 2 muscle fibers are pretty costly to maintain from a metabolic perspective, your body would rather get rid of them if you're not using them. So it's really important to load these muscles, even if you feel like you're someone who gains muscle relatively easily. And we'll talk about some suggestions for someone like that. So we can make the composition of fiber type that we have by nature larger with training. So we can make our type 1 fibers larger. We can make our type 2 fibers larger. To engage and hypertrophy our type 2 muscle fibers, which is what we ultimately want to try to do, you have to have significant challenge to the muscle. People misinterpret this as you have to lift heavy when in reality, you don't have to lift heavy to see muscle growth and to see hypertrophy of your type 2 fibers. The number on your dumbbell is actually not as important as the overall challenge to your muscle. And this is what I think a lot of quote unquote experts in this field that are saying that you have to lift heavy aren't really understanding is that it's not necessarily about the weight. It's about physics and it's about the levers and the challenge to the muscle. So let's use an example. You could squat, and I've done this on Instagram a lot of times. I've kind of written out the mechanics of this, but you could squat over 100 pounds and still get more load to your glute with a bodyweight step up. How is that? How could a bodyweight step up and a 100-pound squat be the same load to the glute or potentially the bodyweight step up even more load? This is because of how physics is at play. When you're using a bodyweight step up, number one, it's just one leg working instead of two. So that immediately doubles the load to the glute. And then number two, you're also having to lift the weight of your non-working leg. So that adds load, that adds challenge to the glute without having to lift a heavier weight. So again, this has nothing to do with the number on your dumbbell. It's all about a manipulation of physics. And you can grow your glutes and see significant change to your glutes by using a bodyweight step up, especially when you're not using that back foot to push off and you're really kind of using it, letting that back leg be dead weight. So just because one exercise uses heavier weights, it doesn't necessarily make it more effective for growing a muscle. It's about the force distribution. It's about the levers. Here's another example of how heavier weights aren't necessarily better. Doing bodyweight jump squats. So like explosive jump squats for 30 seconds at all out effort is one way to recruit your type 2 muscle fibers, even if it's just body weight. So again, just another example that it's not necessarily about using heavy weight. I'm not saying that everyone should go do that exercise. I'm just challenging that dogma there. And then a third example is that increasing range of motion of a body weight exercise can magnify the challenge to the muscles significantly, even though you aren't adding more weight. So I just did an entire Instagram post breakdown on that. I'm going to link that in the show notes so that you can see an example and you can see this in action. And I give lots of details in the caption about how not all body weight exercises are created equal. Some are not enough mechanical load to see muscle hypertrophy. But again, it's just another example that it's not always about the weight on your dumbbell. It's not always about lifting heavy. Lifting heavy is not bad or wrong. And of course, lifting heavy can be a great method to improve hypertrophy and improve the composition and the size of those type 2 fibers, but it's not the only way. Now, I'm not saying all strength training is created equal. If your training is too high rep, like if you could do more than about 30 reps and you could keep going for a really, really long time, studies show that that probably isn't enough mechanical load to significantly challenge those type 2 muscle fibers and see muscle growth. So you have to stay at about under 30 reps and get close to failure by the end of every set. So you should feel like you're within 3 to 4 reps of not being able to complete another rep. So that is what you need to create enough challenge to the muscle to see results, not necessarily about lifting heavy. So making what you currently have bigger. So your genetic predisposed composition of your fibers, you can make what you have bigger. And then you can also potentially shift more of your type 1 fibers to type 2 fibers. So it seems like these fibers may be able to transition between type 1 fibers and type 2 fibers, or vice versa. With training, you can shift type 2 fibers to type 1 fibers, which is what we don't want to do. And I'll talk about that here in a moment. So this study showed that sprints and plyometrics may influence the composition of muscle fibers from type 1 fibers to type 2 fibers. So if you are doing sprint interval training or sprints or all out effort exercises, this study showed that that can potentially shift your type 1 muscle fibers to type 2 muscle fibers. Really interesting. So sprint interval training is all out effort for 30 seconds or less, 8 to 30 seconds actually, with about 1 to 3 minutes of rest in between. So an example is you could do, one of my favorites is to just to do chair jumps. So sit on a chair, jump up, as soon as your butt hits the chair, explode right back up and go as hard as you possibly can. Your legs are going to be screaming. Your heart's going to be bumping through your chest. It is sub max or above your maximum threshold of effort. And it's for a short period, just 8 to 30 seconds. And you could repeat that several times. And I talk about this all the time, but if you're going to incorporate this type of training, it needs to be brief and infrequent. This is not a type of training that you would want to do every day because your type 2 muscle fibers require days to recover. Same with lifting. You need days in between. Otherwise, you're going to spin in chronic inflammation. So I like to say 2 times per week max of this sprint interval training on non-consecutive days. And the sessions can be short, like 15 minutes of interval sprints, including a warm up and a cool down. Really not a long time at all. But not everyone is in a place where they can do sit sprint interval training. If you are struggling with fertility or chronic stress or joint pain, or if you just really hate this type of training and you're like, listen, I'm just not going to do it. Is there another way for you to transition your type 1 fibers to type 2 fibers? Answer is potentially yes. You can make what you have bigger with training, like we talked about, but you also may be able to use resistance training to transition your muscle fiber types from type 1 to type 2. Again, the secret is approaching failure towards the end of your set where your type 2 muscle fibers are called into action. So if you are not in a place where you want to incorporate sit, I'm currently not doing sit and I probably won't do it. I probably won't add it back into my routine for a while now, but you can still just strength train and resistance train close to failure and potentially transition those fiber types from type one to type two. What about the opposite way? How can training and how you're exercising switch your fiber type composition in the way we don't want, which is transitioning your type 2 muscle fibers to type 1 muscle fibers? So the paper that I'll link in the show notes suggests that an endurance focused routine can do this. A study looked at how a 13-week marathon training influenced fiber type composition in novice runners. Overall, they found that this endurance training shifted the composition of muscle fiber types in favor of type 1 fibers. So the type 1 fibers increased and the type 2 fibers decreased. This, I think, could be a reason why people maybe switch to cardio only and they feel themselves get overall smaller. It might not be because they're losing fat. They might be losing muscle because remember, those type 2 fibers in general tend to take up more space. They tend to take up more of your muscle mass. So if someone switches from resistance training to cardio only and they're like, well, I lost a bunch of weight. Well, a lot of that weight could have just been muscle, not necessarily fat. And so your body composition actually can suffer from exclusively doing endurance type training. So if you are someone who likes to run, you like to do the endurance training, just make sure that you're also strength training to try to keep that composition of type 2 muscle fibers at least maintained, if not increase that composition. So because we lose type 2 fibers as we age, this really illustrates the importance of strength training with enough effort. If you are someone who genetically keeps muscle pretty easily and you're someone who you might feel like you lean more towards that type 2 muscle fiber composition genetically, you may be able to get away with strength training less while maintaining or even gaining the mass that you currently have. If you're an Evlo member, you could even just do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday classes like upper body, lower body, and burn, and just spread those three classes out throughout your week. Each of those classes is 35 minutes. And you could, if you're someone who naturally you have higher muscle mass, you might be able to maintain what you have with that volume. You might even be able to gain with that volume. If you're someone like me where you have a harder time building muscle, maybe you feel like you lean more towards that type 1 muscle type composition, you may want to be on the 3 times per week or the 5 times per week track. The 3 times per week and 5 times per week track are equal volume. The 3 times per week track just has some longer classes and the 5 times per week track is 35 minute classes 5 times. So this is going to be the most volume in the program. And if you lean genetically, like it's a little harder for you to gain muscle, you might need a little bit more volume. If you're somewhere in the middle, like this is my husband, you could get away with doing the 4 times per week track, which is a little less volume, and still see muscle growth or maintain what you have. Again, my husband's been doing the 4 times per week track for like 3 years now. And honestly, he's like, I was talking to him this morning. He's like, if I'm being honest with you, I think it's more like 3.5 times that I do the classes every week and he's still gaining muscle. So it's, you just have to kind of test for yourself and understand that if you genetically have a hard time building muscle, you might need more volume. I always recommend at least those 2 recovery days where you're doing more light intensity exercise like walking, so that you can recover and so that you can come back the next week stronger and able to load your muscles more. Evlo is really not a one size fits all. And I really want this podcast to be a compliment to the membership. Of course, if you're not a member, I hope that you get value too. But I really want this podcast to be a compliment to the membership to help give you information so that you can tweak your schedule and see how your body responds best. Okay. If you are someone who you feel like you gain muscle really easily, does that mean that you should just do endurance type activities like cardio only or Pilates and barre only? I personally do not recommend that because I think that loading muscles with enough challenge on a consistent basis is very important to continue to at least maintain the type 2 fiber composition that you have. It is truly anti-aging from the inside out. Your cells will be healthier because of the metabolic improvements and your body composition will stay healthier as well. So if you are someone who you're like, I gain muscle really easily, you might just be able to train less, which is, I'm jealous. But I don't recommend that you just shift the way you exercise at all because 20 years could pass and you might lose all your muscle mass. Your body composition might be completely different. You might be kicking yourself for not at least trying to maintain what you currently have. Okay, so that's fiber types. Whew, that was a lot. Now I want to talk about hormones briefly. Fiber composition and hormones are actually a bit related. So you're not going to fully separate this and this is going to seem a little bit repetitive. So I'm not going to get into it too much. But when it comes to building muscle and ultimately seeing results from training, you have to have enough anabolic stimulus. Anabolic hormones like testosterone and growth hormone help to stimulate muscle protein synthesis and build muscle following your workout. So these anabolic hormones are important for your results. Let's go over the genetic influence of testosterone in particular, which is one of the primary anabolic hormones that's responsible for protein synthesis and therefore your results. So testosterone, a lot of you ladies may like check out when you hear the word testosterone, but because it's been labeled as a male hormone, but females have it too. And it's important for building muscle for both males and females because it's an anabolic hormone. So it aids in building the tissue up, which is the adaptation that we're looking for when we are loading our muscles. A lot of people think that we're loading our muscles to try to spot treat fat, and that is not how your body responds to training and weightlifting and exercise. Your body responds by building muscle if your anabolic hormones are high enough. Genetics account for about 40 to 70% of the variation in testosterone levels in men. So 40 to 70% in men and about 65% in women. So in women, your levels of testosterone are more than halfway determined by genetics. Genetically lower levels of testosterone between men and women can explain in part why men tend to respond quicker to training and gain muscle easier. Men tend to have higher levels of testosterone. So if you're like, okay, 65% of the variability in my testosterone is up to my genetics, what about the remaining 35%? Maybe that could be up to training and lifestyle, how you're training, how you're recovering, your overall lifestyle, your stress levels, all those things. One study showed that female sprinters displayed higher levels of testosterone than long distance runners did. So again, female sprinters had higher levels of testosterone than long distance runners or endurance runners. And I had a lot of questions about this. Is it the activity itself that's causing an increase in cortisol and thus a greater swing in testosterone to try to balance the cortisol and bring them back to homeostasis? Like if they're sprinting, that's going to trigger a stress response, increasing cortisol, and to try to bring you back to homeostasis. Is that anabolic swing in testosterone going to overall bring you back? Is that why there's higher levels of testosterone? Or is this because they genetically have a higher type 2 fiber muscle fiber content? Or is it because of their genetic disposition to just having in general higher levels of testosterone? And I couldn't find conclusive answers to those questions, but I will say that I think it's probably a little bit of all of those things. I think that people who are naturally type 2 muscle fiber dominant and potentially have higher levels of testosterone from a nature genetic standpoint, gravitate towards activities like sprinting because they're naturally inclined. They're naturally good at it. And then they work hard and train hard because they're naturally gifted and they get better at it. And their body composition starts to reflect how they're training in combination with their genetics. So that's testosterone. How do you know if you have higher levels of these anabolic hormones that will help you recover faster and build muscle easier? Again, I think we should go back to kind of post-puberty when you were a young adult to kind of see like maybe what your genetic potential may be. So were you naturally athletic and gained muscle easily? Does it seem like you can work out very little and see muscle growth within a matter of a few weeks? Do you feel like you could recover quickly and work out really often without consequence? Those could all be indications that you have just higher levels of testosterone naturally or anabolic hormones naturally. Most elite athletes and potentially a lot of influencers online are likely these kind of super responders that have naturally high anabolic hormones, which makes it easier for them to recover and train harder and see better results. By the way, I feel like I need to say this because we're talking about anabolic hormones. So many fitness influencers take anabolic steroids and these anabolic steroids help them recover. It helps their body build muscle faster. It helps them, they're able to train a lot harder and for a lot longer and build muscle easier. So some people just may be blessed and have the genetics that give them the predisposition to be able to train hard and not get injured and see muscle growth really easily. Some people really are just working hard and, you know, they're taking care of themselves and they have the lifestyle to support that. And then some people are taking anabolic steroids. So I think it's important to know that. So that's genetically higher levels of anabolic hormones. How do you know if you have like maybe average level of anabolic hormones? And this is going to be most of us. So again, take yourself back to high school. Did you have maybe some muscle growth, but you'd have to work for it? Like it would maybe take you like a few months to see noticeable changes, but it definitely happens. you have like maybe more gradual strength gain. Do you have kind of average athleticism? You're not super fast. You weren't the star on the basketball team or the track team. But you're also not the slowest. You're not the worst. You're not terrible at athletics. Will you have to regularly strength train in a structured way to avoid muscle mass loss? Like if you feel like if you didn't train, would you pretty easily lose muscle? I'll give recommendations on how to train if you feel like you fall into this category here in a second. And then lastly, how do you know if you might naturally have lower levels of anabolic hormones? This is me, I think. I think I probably fall somewhere between average and low. So do you have slow muscle growth? Does it take you a long time, like longer than 12 weeks to see any progress? Do you have difficulty with maintaining or gaining muscle mass, or do you feel like you get injured easily? Are you prone to slower recovery? You feel like you have slower progression and you maybe need more recovery days. Do you feel like you might have below average athleticism? You feel like you are kind of slow, a slow runner. You can't jump high. This was 100% me. And I laugh because I was a cheerleader and I, you know, you have to do jumps in cheerleading and you have to do like tumbling and stuff. I was the worst. I barely got off the floor in my jumps and could not do any of the tumbling. It's just, I just did not have the natural inclination. And that's okay. So I gave you kind of different categories. If you have potentially higher levels of anabolic hormones, maybe you're mid, and then maybe you have low. So given that information about yourself, how should you train? And again, the recommendations are really similar to what I recommended for your genetic fiber type composition. So if you respond quickly and you have potentially higher levels of those anabolic hormones, potentially higher composition of those type 2 muscle fibers, you can get away with training less. It doesn't mean you don't want to be active overall. You still want to have a structured routine. It's not like anything goes, but you may not have to strength train with as much volume to gain or maintain muscle mass. Again, I talked about if you're an Evlo member, you could potentially do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday class and just spread those out throughout the week. If you fall in that average category, you could get away with maybe on taking the 4-time-per-week track, like what my husband does. And then if you're on the lower, you may need more volume, but also balancing recovery days. Like what I do, since I tend to classify myself as this kind of lower genetic predisposition, I do the 5-time-per-week track. I find that works really well for my body. And then I have to take 2 days off each week. If I don't do that because I've got to film something extra or whatever it might be, I feel it in my body and I feel like I can't recover. I feel weaker. I have to really find that balance. And then I also have to make sure that I take a recovery week or a reset week every 8 to 12 weeks. And I really try to be diligent about this. Reset weeks don't need to be the entire week. They could be 4 days, but just taking a periodic time off resistance training can be really helpful, especially if you feel like genetically you're someone who struggles with recovery and with building muscle. So remember, this is not prescriptive. I don't want you to listen to this and be like, I'm in this bucket, which means I need to do exactly this. That's not what I'm saying. It's about using the scientific method on yourself to see how best you respond, because this is all going to be shades of gray. You may identify with the average category, but you might see better results and feel better when you're doing the 3-time-per-week track rather than the 4-time-per-week track. Or you may, in high school, have had great athleticism and been the fastest on the track team, but maybe time and lifestyle have taken a toll over the last 20 years and changed things for you. So maybe you need more volume now than you did when you were younger. Maybe you could have gotten away with doing less when you were younger, and now you may have lost some of that type 2 muscle fiber content, and therefore potentially your hormones may be influenced. And so you might need a different volume now. Another thing to consider is your protein intake, depending on kind of what bucket you classify yourself in. I found that I have to eat 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. And make sure you're following the macros content on the membership, because this is not my area of expertise. So you've got to play with your own kind of different macros to see how much protein you need. But understanding that if you genetically struggle to gain muscle, you might need more protein than the average person, even if you're training consistently. So understanding that genetics do play a role in how we adapt and how our body changes with exercise, knowing that we have a lot of control over how to improve our body and our health. I think understanding some of these things about yourself can help you make decisions and help you play with your routine to ultimately figure out what works the best for you in the stage of life that you're in. So I hope this was helpful and interesting. Remember that if you like this podcast, I do this completely for free. I don't take advertising and I don't plan to. So if you wouldn't mind leaving a rating and review, I would be forever grateful, and maybe share it with a friend. That's a lot of times how the podcast grows too, is sharing on social media or with a friend. I would appreciate it so much. All right, everyone. See you next week. Same time, same place. Bye for now.